Hi there, and welcome to the Engage Customer Podcast, where you'll discover the latest insights, opinions, and trends within the industry. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Salesforce, the world's number one service platform. With Salesforce, you have a 360-degree view of your customers, empowering agents and making interactions easy for your customers. The result? Deeper customer relationships built on intelligence, empathy, and trust. Visit sfdc.co/customer-service to find out more.
Today, our editor, David Craik, is delighted to be joined by Adrian Morley, change consultant at the Co-op, and case study presenter at our 2019 Future of the Contact Center conference. Adrian is a customer-centric, strategic thinker with 20-plus years' experience delivering results in a variety of marketing and operations roles within utilities and financial services sectors.
Thanks for agreeing to join us and talk through the talk that you gave last week at the conference. Now, the theme was positioning the contact center as a strategic asset for the business. I just wonder perhaps if you could just start off with at the start of the journey, really, I guess in 2015. Can you possibly describe what the contact center looked like at the Co-op at that time, its position in the business, its relevance to the business? Just some thoughts there would be good.
Yeah, so back in 2015, we had a number of contact centres around the Co-op that aligned into different business units or aligned to specific functions. They were very small scale, and I guess you could describe it as forming a process-led function. So the focus was really all around, you know, what we're here to do is we get calls, we take the calls, we get emails, we answer the emails, we count the emails, we work out, you know, how many we've done, and that's about it. The change there came when a lady called Jane McCall was looking around the Co-op as part of her role as transformation director, and she said, "Oh, what are all these little contact centers doing around here? I know we could really do something with those." She'd worked with contact centers before. I think she saw an opportunity. So she kind of grabbed hold of two of them. One was the customer care contact center, which looked after predominantly complaints for the food business. And the other one was membership servicing contact center, which dealt with membership queries around the Co-op membership card and so on. And she said, I'll have those and I will do something with them. So her first task was to bring Claire Carroll in, and Claire, as a seasoned contact center professional who'd handled much bigger contact centers, and coming into a sort of 100-seat contact center with very little profile in the business didn't seem like the ideal career move, but Jane convinced her that there was more to come and that this was the start of a journey. So Claire started just by trying to understand what level of maturity the center was at, and she found there were a number of issues. Just basically the contact center didn't really consider itself a contact center. People were kind of quite indignant at the actual terminology. Didn't want to wear headsets. And there was a whole load of metrics sort of floating around that didn't really serve a purpose, weren't particularly accurate, and weren't presenting a picture of what that contact center was there to do. So that was Claire's starting point.
Were they measuring different things or not measuring things accurately?
I think the issue was it was trying to measure too much. I think you look around and you think, well, what can we measure here? And you start measuring it, and before you know it, you've built up a whole raft of things that you're trying to measure, but you kind of forgot why you were trying to measure them. So Claire's sort of initial thing and really sort of step one of the journey to relevance that we talked about was to build a reputation within the contact center for doing the basics right and to gain credibility and trust. So that was really just about stripping back the metrics to just focus on a couple of really sort of clear outcomes that clearly aligned to serving customers well. And it really was as simple as just saying, for telephony, it's around how long it takes to get through and how many calls you have manned. And for email, it's how long it takes us to reply to an email and what percentage we can get out in 2 days. And just from those, from that sort of simple start, relentlessly focusing on those measures and trying to show that there was continuous improvement, trying to get a process around understanding performance, and then just moving that forward and then telling people about that, that's kind of what got things started, really. That's what got people saying, right, I understand what they're trying to do there. I can see that it's working. These guys know what they're doing. And that was kind of the first awakening of interest in our contact center.
Yeah. I think you mentioned there about perhaps the culture wasn't as strong as it could be. People didn't want to wear headsets, didn't want to be, or didn't recognize themselves as contact center professionals. I mean, how did you tackle that and perhaps look at culture and training and trying to improve the performance of the staff as well?
Well, I guess the best way of doing that and the way that is most long lasting and permanent is to create a vision for what the contact center is there to do. And that's essentially what we did. So having given people the confidence to say, look here, if we work together, we can improve basic performance. And look, it is working. So stick with us. We know what we're doing. The next thing, I guess, is to sort of try and paint a slightly more compelling picture to say, okay, we do the basics, but what about all the value we can add to the business? So that's where we started to look at what's the wider co-op strategy. And at the time, it was revitalizing the membership proposition and rebuilding the co-op food stores proposition around what customers want. So we said, well, we can play a big part in that, because membership's all about building relationships and deepening relationships with members. And the True North program to revitalize the food stores is all about listening to what customers want and changing what we do in the food stores. So on the one hand, we had nearly sort of 750,000 contacts with members every year. Well, that's a great opportunity to engage those members. And then on the other hand, we had around 150,000 complaints about from the food stores estate. And that's a great opportunity to turn that into a form of insight that the business can then use to improve what they do. So I guess we turned the tables a little bit. It's not we're here to answer calls and answer emails. It's we're here to build valued relationships and to deliver insights that can help build a better co-op. And that is a much more compelling and engaging vision. So that is what we put to the team and said, that's what you're here to do. And of course, it was all about, the way you're going to do that. So we said, well, this is all now about you deciding what's right for that customer. You are empowered to do what you think is necessary to get that customer back to where they were before. In other words, to restore that broken relationship. And in the case of complaint, or in the case of a membership interaction, it's, where are they on the membership journey? Are we, welcoming a new member, in which case we need to talk about these things, or are we talking about someone who's really bought in, who we could maybe persuade to sort of go out and talk a little bit more widely about us to their social media networks? But each opportunity that we've got can add value for the co-op, and that's what we had to get people thinking about and engaged with. And when we did, I think the reaction was immediate, that they could see that there was more to this than they had thought. And by introducing measures that were aligned to those outcomes as well, we could show people that if they did the right things for customers, it'd be right for them as well, and they'd be rewarded appropriately.
When you began the first step to try and improve the core performance of the contact center, I mean, did Jane have this overarching strategy in mind that perhaps it was to do with positioning the contact center as more of a relevant asset for the business? Was she communicating with the executives, the management team about this, or did that evolve?
Yes, at that stage of the journey, there was not sufficient profile around the contact centres really for anybody outside of our circle to be thinking too far ahead. It was it was just simply I've brought someone good in here and they're making things better and they're delivering results. I guess the sharing of the vision around what we could do for the business came a little bit later. But I guess the crucial point here is that we earned the right to those conversations by showing that we could do a good job delivering the basics.
Okay. And did those conversations with management, did that lead to you saying, well, member relationships, True North, we can actually make a difference here. We can help propel this forward.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, it almost kind of goes back to the old, story about when JFK visited Cape Canaveral and spoke to a janitor about, what are you here to do? And he said, I'm helping put a man on the moon. It was about the fact that, I guess, our equivalent to him turning around and saying, I'm here to clean the toilets, would be us saying, I'm here to answer the phones. But we were saying, what are you here for? Well, we're here to deepen relationships with members, and we're here to provide valuable insights that are going to help you build a better co-op food business. And that's like, oh, right, okay, well, I understand that. Those things align to issues that I've got in my head as an exec. That's kind of how I'm trying to move the business forward. And these guys are showing that they understand how to do that as well. So I guess that was the theme of the talk, really, right up front. It was about how to align your narrative around what you're trying to do with your contact center to what your CEO or exec member is trying to do in terms of steering the whole business. And when we started doing that, we showed that we were able to make big changes to customer behavior and that was taking us in the right direction. Again, that changed the tone of the discussion, started to get people more interested and started to get more buy-in for what we were trying to do.
You mentioned the talk about the membership relationships and how it saved the co-op, I think it was £12 million in sales. Can you talk a little bit more about that and perhaps how you came to that measurement and perhaps how you managed to restore some of these broken relationships with members?
So we decided that we couldn't just stand there and tell people that we were building valued relationships and trust us, we are. We decided that we needed to work those numbers out. We needed evidence that this is making a difference. So our biggest opportunity across that whole sort of relationship cycle of attract, engage, deepen, retain, and advocate. Retain was probably our biggest value opportunity because we dealt with 150,000 complaints per year. And of course, each one of those complainants has the opportunity to either continue to shop with the co-op or to go elsewhere. So that essentially is what we tried to work out in pounds, was what's the value at risk associated with the complaints we handle, and what is the impact of us handling those complaints in a way that is focused on restoring the relationship versus our previous approach of simply handling the complaint, turning it around, and that's the end of the story. So we got a sample of data. So thankfully, we're quite lucky in that with having a membership scheme, we can see what people are doing. We can see what members are doing with their cards and what they're spending with us. The first insight was that complainants were spent three times what the average customer did. That is consistent with all other observations I've ever seen around complaints analysis. It's because people who complain about you actually care about you fixing things because they do a lot more business with you. They want it fixed. That's why they complain. So that gave us a figure of roughly £200 million value at risk. The next thing was to work out was how much of that £200 million was left following the complaint. So you look at basket spend 3 months before the complaint and basket spend 3 months after the complaint. And that delta is the amount of value that you're losing through your complaints. The slightly disappointing finding of the first pass of the analysis was actually we're retaining 90%. This is probably because the co-op has convenience store networks. If you live near a co-op, you're going to go to the co-op. And maybe because, you know, despite the fact that the customer has complained, it's not perhaps enough to turn them off. However, you know, £20 million worth of value being eroded per year through complaints was definitely something to go at. So then we implemented our improvements around complaint handling and we measured it again. And 1 year later, we found that that 90% figure had gone to 96%. So we were retaining all but £8 million of our trade, and we'd increased the amount we'd retain by £12 million. So that just helped us put a figure on our contribution to retaining valued relationships. And again, nothing quite like putting a big pounds figure in front of an exec to get their attention. And you know, also, you know, this is just one part of the story. The other element of our approach to complaints was to get much more focused on fixing things. So when we measured the reduction in complaints and we saw a 20% drop in complaint volumes, we also then said, well, you know, that's 20% fewer complaints in the first place. And, you know, there's probably about 20 customers where something went wrong and they didn't complain for every one where something went wrong and they did complain. So fixing things really, you know, that's probably where the real value lies. So very much something that changed perceptions and set us on a course, I think, for really understanding using customer behavior and trying to measure and evaluate the impact on customer behavior as the most important metric for our contact center.
Okay. You mentioned there about improvements around complaints handling. Can you maybe just mention a couple of things that you did there to try and improve that?
Yeah, certainly. I think the biggest single thing was empowering the advisors to do what was right for the customer. Previously, there'd been all sorts of different rules and checks and processes around, you know, if you want to give someone a £10 voucher, you have to get it signed off by a team manager. If a complaint was about something to do with the store estate, you had to go via the area manager to get agreement for something to happen. And Claire just cut through all of that and said, like, no, we've been given the remit to fix this for the customer, and so we're going to do what it takes to fix it for the customer. And you will not be criticised, you will not be pulled up for doing what you think's right for that customer if you think it's going to restore their faith in the co-op and keep them coming back. Really, really important that you live by that, that people don't think it's, you know, just go on, do what you think's right, and then afterwards you come after them and said, "Ah, well, you know, when you did that, that's a black mark against you because we didn't want you to do that." So you have to actually sort of commit fully. But we set up an Amazon account so that people could buy, you know, really appropriate gifts and so on. So one example would be when a customer mentioned that her daughter had been affected by something that had gone wrong. And the daughter isn't a frozen, so our advisor went on online and brought like a frozen dressing up outfit, I think, and sent it along. And the customer was absolutely delighted that sort of that had been picked up on, and it was personalised in that sense. But there was also, you know, there's also process benefits to that. If you take away all the rules and the restrictions around who needs to sign off what and who this needs to go through, it means you just resolve complaints a lot quicker. There's less internal passing around because the buck stops with the person handling the complaint. And we saw massive productivity improvements as well. So not only did it help us deliver a better outcome that restored relationships, but it also helped us to improve our time to resolve. And so it was a win-win.
Yeah. And I guess employee engagement must have improved. Employees must have felt a bit more valued in their role.
Yes, over that period, so prior to 2015, the team engagement level was pretty low. It was 59%. It was nearly 20 points lower than the co-op average. By the time we'd come out of 2016, we'd moved that up to 85%. So it's a 21-point increase in employee engagement. It's quite sort of transformational, really, and we're 9 points above the co-op average as well. And this is another really good way of getting noticed, because you know, all execs are really, really focused on leadership because they are leaders themselves. They recognise that, you know, if you can take a bunch of people who answer the phones and get complained at all day, and make them as engaged as that, then you're obviously doing something quite special. It's a really key part of the story, and probably one of the most rewarding ones to be involved in as well, because you can really sense that difference around the place where people believe, okay, you know, they still know, they still feel the pain sometimes. You know, it can be difficult to deal with angry customers and so on, but thanks to some resilience training that we did with an agency called Let's Get Healthy, which was specifically designed to help them improve their resilience around this. It's all about sort of making them realize that would have happened without them anyway, but what they can do and what they can bring with their skills is to help that customer come through it and to be in a better position afterwards, and that they're actually, you know, doing a really great job for that customer, and they should be proud of that. So I think that was another key part of the improvement in engagement.
And you mentioned the talk about insights and directly helping the co-op's food strategy True North. Can you give us maybe just a couple of examples, perhaps, how you helped that strategy develop and get better?
Yeah, so the component of our strategy around delivering valued insights is a real success story, and in fact, actually, it was something we put forward for the 2017 European Awards Best Voice of Customer Award, which we won gold for. There's two, and of course, you know, winning awards is quite a good way of getting noticed by the exec as well. Particularly actually around an aspect of your strategy that is quite difficult to measure. So it just kind of rubber stamped that and said, you know, what we're doing here is pretty much as good as anything else in the industry. So our voice of customer approach really looked at two ways to which feedback could help us improve things for customers. Firstly, our feedback to the co-op so that they could help, they could do things better and improve the proposition. And secondly, the way we used feedback in our own contact center operation to improve the outcomes that we delivered for customers that we dealt with. So in other words, a sort of inward looking and an outward looking arm. In terms of the store complaints, we have a number of opportunities. So first is simply every complaint you get, you can fix something. So, you know, a customer complains about a chair not being in nowhere to sit down in a store, you get in touch with the manager, you get a chair, that's that fixed. That's the simplest possible example, you know. But then you move into being able to put together trends around complaints. So we do reports, particularly works well with products. Do we have any hotspots for product complaints? Does that indicate that there's a problem with the product? We've got a really great relationship with the technical team who manage suppliers, and they ensure that we follow up rigorously when there's complaints. And it's actually a service that our suppliers value greatly from us, because it gives them great insight. So we've got a number of examples of where we've improved products. And on a couple of occasions, we've actually sent the customers the reformulated products to see as part of the, you know, closing the loop, so that they know that their feedback helped us to make that a better product for them. Then we also get involved in root cause analysis, so where the business has a specific problem, like queuing, for example, we can look back through complaints and use text analysis and so on to pick out trends and what the issues are. So, for example, with queues, it's not so much about being in a queue, but it's what's happening when you're in the queue, the staff attitude. If you've got kids, it's sweets next to the counters and so on, that sort of thing. The fourth one is where we improve, where we use complaints to actually measure something that the business would otherwise have had to pay for. So in one example, we saved the food business £60,000 because we were able to provide, using complaints analysis, pretty much exactly what they needed to track whether an operational change had impacted customers or not, and they were going to go out to a research agency for that. And then finally, the real biggie, I think, and the one that I got most sort of interested in, was around how we feed complaints into this whole strategic planning process at the co-op. So within Co-op Food, there had been identified a sort of seven-point proposition around everyday convenience, which was things like, you know, you find your way around the store easily, you find the products you need, and so on. You know, really good statements that customers surfaced from customer research, things customers wanted when they came in. You can find when you're sort of playing back complaints into the business, you can perhaps lose your audience a little bit if you just talk about, oh, this category went up, that category went down. What we tried to do with this is to align all of our categories into those seven elements of the proposition. So, in other words, what we did there was we could go back to the business and talk to them, say, here, see these seven things that you're really trying to nail to deliver everyday convenience. Well, here's how you're not doing it. And then from there, we went into, and here's how you could. So that was a complete game changer. That really landed well and gave us a role in moving the strategy at that level of the food business forward. That was the outward looking, and then the inward looking, I won't go into quite so much detail around, but it's really about using our CSAT survey to drive performance with agent KPIs, using it to communicate measures back to the exec, using it to recover service so that if a customer rates you, less than perfect, you get back in touch with them and so on. So with that, we've enabled a really significant improvement in performance. Pretty successful. So we got an award from that, and of course we saw the overall level of complaints in 2017 come down by 20% as a result of fixing things for customers. So that sort of completes the story.
In terms of the results of all this hard work, I mean, do you feel that you are now helping drive the growth of the company, that perhaps you have a seat at the table, as it were, or perhaps an executive's management coming to you and saying, this is how you can help us. And, do do you think you have become much more relevant?
Yeah, well, certainly it hasn't done Claire's career any harm, and those around her, such as myself. Of course, you know, being noticed and having this great story around how we've improved contact centre did prompt the question, well, you know, what else have we got out there across the whole estate that we could bring together and start applying some of these best practices? And so that was where we looked at our sort of federated structure and said, right, how can we bring all that together into a single shared services unit built on principles of best practice with very clear lines of sight into the distinct types of customers that we serve, and those are predominantly customers, colleagues through help desks and so on, and suppliers. So that idea took shape around the end of 2017, and our 2018 has been spent building the business case and roadmap for this co-op service centre. And at the end of 2018, the new operate model with Love was launched. And one of the key benefits of having this now much bigger operation is that we've got a really senior executive leader who happens to be Jane McCall, who is the person who, back in 2015, had the original idea to try and do something with contact centres. So that's a really nice kind of part of the story that it's come full circle. And the CSC is now set up to be an engine for growth. It's now enabled so that you know, things can be brought in and moved out very, very flexibly. We've got access to better technology now. We've got the scale to start buying in better technology. It means that any future sort of mergers and acquisitions activity that the co-op might be interested in the future can be looked at in terms of stripping out parts of the value chain that perhaps aren't working as optimally, and then replacing them with the co-op CSC model, which we know is now running pretty efficiently. So, you know, very much looking at the CSC as an engine for growth. Yes, it will be delivering significant operational benefits in terms of cost, but much more than that, it can flex to deliver the right kind of outcomes for customers, colleagues and suppliers, and can serve communities in line with co-op's future strategy as well.
All right, Adrian, well, just a final question. Perhaps any advice to other contact centres about doing something similar? I mean, is this something that other centres can do?
The purpose of really coming along to the event really was to just share our journey, and if that's of use to anyone who finds themselves in that same situation, then you know that's great, because I think the benefits we've seen have been significant for the co-op, but you know it's really about the people we all care about, is our colleagues who work in the contact centres feeling that they've got more meaning to their daily roles, that they are more valued, that they do have more opportunity, and that they can go home at the end of the day feeling like they've done a really important job. So if that can happen, you know, anywhere else as a result of us sharing this story, then I'm very happy about that.
Wonderful. All right, Adrian, that's all my questions. So, thank you very much for your time again, and thank you for sharing a very positive story both at the talk and during this chat. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.